Osho, the grass grows by itself. Talks on Zen, given at the Osho Commune International, Pune, India. Discourse number 7.
An ex-emperor asked the master Gudo, "What happens to a man of enlightenment after death?" Gudo replied, "How should I know?" The ex-emperor said, "Why? Because you are a master." Gudo said, "Yes, sir, but not a dead one."
Man is ignorant of the real. And it is difficult to know the real. Because to know the real, first you have to be the real. Only the same can know the same. Man is false. As man exists, he is a deep hypocrite. He is not real himself. His original face is completely lost. He has many faces. He uses many faces. But he himself is not aware of the original face, his own. Man is an imitator. He goes on imitating others, and by and by he completely forgets that he has his unique being. The real can be known only when you are real. It is a tremendous effort. Arduous is the path. So man tries a trick. He starts thinking about the real, philosophizing, theorizing, creating mental systems about the real. That is all what philosophy is. A trick of the mind to deceive oneself that one is ignorant. That one does not know the real. That's why philosophies abound, and the whole world lives in concepts, theories. Hindus, Mohammedans, Christians, Jains, Buddhists, and millions of concepts are there. They are cheap. You need not change yourself. You need an ordinary intelligent mind. A mediocre mind will do. No higher egoist. There is not any difficulty. You can adopt concepts and you can hide your ignorance from yourself. Philosophy is just a hiding method. One starts feeling that one knows without knowing at all. One starts feeling that one has arrived without even taking the first step. Philosophy is the greatest disease. And once you are caught in it, it is very difficult to come out of it. Because it is so deeply fulfilling to the ego. one feels hurt when one comes to know one's ignorance. And ignorance is total and absolute. You don't know anything at all. You are simply in dark ignorance. And this hurts. One would like to know something, at least something. And philosophy gives you consolation that here are theories. If you have an ordinary intelligence, that will do. You can learn theories. You can have your own system, a philosophy, and then you are at ease. Then not only you know, you can teach others. You can advise others. You can go on sowing your knowledge to others. And everything is settled. Ignorance is forgotten. Philosophy means a logical construction about reality. It is about and about and about. It is never the real. Round and round it goes, just beating the bush around. But it never hits the center of the real. It cannot do that. It is not possible for philosophy. Why it is not possible? Because philosophy is based on logic, and reality is beyond logic. You have to understand it a little more. A logic is a search for consistency, and reality is not consistent. Or it is so deeply consistent that even the opposite is not inconsistent to it. Reality is paradoxical. All the opposites meet and mingle and merge into it. It is so vast. Logic is narrow. Logic is like a road, narrow, goal-oriented. Reality is like the vast space. No goal, not going anywhere. It is already there. Moving in all dimensions together. Logic is one-dimensional. Reality is multidimensional. Logic says A is A and can never be B. And this is the consistency of logic. And in reality, A is A and always moves and becomes the B. Logic says life is life and can never be death. How life can be death? But in reality, life is every moment moving into death. Life is death. Logic says love is love and can never be hate. And love is every moment moving into hate, and hate moving into love. You love the same person, and you hate the same person. Deeper the love, the deeper the hate. Hate and love are two aspects of the same coin. Can you hate a person without loving him? How can you hate a person without loving him? First you have to love, only then you can hate. Hate needs love as a first step. How can you become inimical to a person to whom you have never been friendly? Friends and foes are separate only in logic. In reality, they are together. If you search your hate deep, you will find love hidden. The moment you are born, death is also born with you. Birth is the beginning of death, and death is the culmination of birth. Says Heraclitus, God is life and death, summer and winter, hunger and satiety, good and bad, always both, and God is reality. If you look at reality, you will see all opposites meeting. Reality is contradictory. Logic is non-contradictory. Logic is clean, plain, simple. Reality is very complex. Reality is not like a logical syllogism or a mathematical problem. It has many dimensions, and it is interrelated, and all contradictions are together. The day turns into night, the night again turns into day. The morning is nothing but the indication that the evening is coming. Youth becomes old age. Everything changes and becomes the opposite. Beauty turns and becomes ugly. This has to be understood deeply, because that is the basic difference between philosophy and religion. Philosophy is logical, religion is not. Religion is real, philosophy is logical. To understand philosophy is not difficult. To understand religion is almost impossible. Logic speaks plain language. Religion cannot speak. Because religion has to speak the language of the reality. Logic is a chosen fragment from reality by the mind. It is not total. Religion accepts the whole and wants to know it as it is. Logic is a mental construction. Philosophy, logic, science, all are mental constructions. They are all based on logic. Religion is a deep structuring of the whole mind. Philosophy is structuring out of the mind about the reality, creating a system and a structure. The mind remains there, and the mind helps you to choose, to project, to find, In religion, you have to restructure mind. The reality remains as it is. You don't do anything to reality. You simply drop the mind. And then you look. Because if the mind is there, the mind won't allow you to look at the whole. The mind is obsessed with consistency. The mind cannot allow the contradictory. So whenever you reach near a person who is enlightened, your mind will be in difficulty. You will feel many contradictions in him. And your mind will say, this man says this, and then he contradicts. And sometimes he says this, and then again something else, and he is inconsistent. A religious man is by the very nature of the case is contradictory. Has to be. Because he is not in search of consistency. He is in search of the truth. He is in search of the real. And he is ready to drop everything for the real, whatsoever the real is. He has no pre-formulated structure for the real. He has no idea how the real should be. If it is inconsistent, it is inconsistent. Okay. He has nothing to impose on it. A religious mind simply allows the real to reveal itself. He has no idea how it should be. A religious man is passive. A logical, philosophical, scientific man is aggressive. He brings some idea, and through that idea he structures reality. Around the idea, he tries to discover the real. The idea won't allow you to discover the real. The very idea is the hindrance. So one path is logic. Another path is poetry. Poetry is against logic. Logic is rational, poetry is irrational. Logic is logical, poetry is imagination. And this distinction has to be remembered because religion is neither, nor logic nor poetry. Logic is also of the mind and imagination is also of the mind. A poet imagines reality. Of course, his reality is more colorful than logician's reality. Because he imagines. And he is not afraid. He is completely free in his imagination. He has not to follow any idea. He simply dreams about reality. But it is again about. He dreams about reality. He makes a beautiful whole out of his dreaming. He is colorful because deep down is fantasy. Logic is plain, colorless, almost gray. No poetry in it, because no imagination in it. Poetry is almost contradictory, because it is imagination. It doesn't bother. You never ask the poet to be consistent. If a poet writes one poetry today, another tomorrow, and contradicts himself, nobody bothers. People say this is poetry. If a painter paints a certain thing today and just the opposite tomorrow, you don't ask for any consistency. You don't say what you are doing. Yesterday you painted the moon yellow and today you are painting the moon reddish. What are you doing? you are contradictory. No, nobody asks. It's poetry. Painting is poetry. Sculpture is poetry. You allow the poet all freedom. But poetry is imagination. Mind has two centers. One is thinking, another is imagination. But both centers are of the mind. Religion is beyond both centers. It is not of the mind at all. It is neither science nor poetry. Or it is both. That's why religion is a deeper mysticism than any poetry. It simply drops the mind with all its centers and then looks. It is just as if sometimes you put your glasses aside and look. Mind can be put aside because it is a mechanism. You are not the mind. The mind is just like a window. You are standing there and looking through the window. Then the frame of the window becomes the frame of reality. You look from the window. The moon has arisen and the sky is beautiful. But your sky will be framed by the window. And if the window has certain glasses, color, then your sky will be colored by the window. Religion is simply coming out of the house completely, looking at reality not through any window, not through any door, not through any glasses, not through any concepts, but simply looking as it is, putting aside the mind. Difficult, because you are so much identified with the mind that you have completely forgotten that you can put it aside. But this is the whole methodology of religion. The whole yoga, tantra and all the techniques of meditations are nothing but how to put the mind aside. How to break the identity with the mind and then look. Then whatsoever is reality is revealed. That which is revealed. I remember this. So sometimes religion will speak the language of logic. Then it becomes theology. Sometimes religion will speak the language of the poetry. Then it becomes objective art. Like Taj Mahal. If you go and watch the Taj Mahal for the first time, you will understand what objective art is. Looking at an piece of an objective art like Taj Mahal, if you simply sit and watch and look, suddenly a silence surrounds you. A peace descends upon you. The very structure of Taj Mahal is related to your innermost being. Just looking at the shape of it, something changes within you. There are two types of art. One art is subjective. For example, Picasso. If you look at a Picasso painting, you can understand what type of mind Picasso must have been. Because his own mind he pictures, paints. And he must have been living in nightmares. Because all his painting is nightmares. You cannot look at it for long. you will feel ill and nausea. It is his inner madness that he has brought in color. It is infectious. This is subjective art. You bring your own mind, whatsoever you do. The objective art is not bringing your own mind, but following some objective rules to change the person who will look at it, meditate on it. The whole Eastern art has tried to be objective. The painter is not involved in it. The painter is forgotten. The sculptor is forgotten. The architect is forgotten. He is not involved in it. He is simply following certain objective rules to create a piece of art. For centuries, whenever somebody will look at it, something of meditation will happen in him. Suddenly time will disappear. In a full moon night, sitting near the Taj Mahal, not talking, just meditating on it, time disappears. A no time moment happens. And suddenly Taj Mahal is not there outside. Something is changing within you. Sometimes religion talks in terms of objective art to bring the reality into this world of the mind. Sometimes it talks in terms of logic, then it becomes theology. Then it argues. But these are both compromises with the world. Compromises with the ordinary, mediocre mind. Bridging religion to the ordinary mind. But when religion speaks in its purity, it is paradoxical. Like the Tao Te King of Lao Tse. Are the fragments of Heraclitus, are these Zen stories. In its purity, religion is transcendental to logic, to imagination both. It is the very beyond. Now, few things about the very beyond, then we can enter into this story. It is small, like a seed, but if you allow it, the soil of your heart, it can grow in a vast tree. It is small, if you look at the form, but if you look at the formless hidden in it, it has no limits, it is infinite. Something to be aware about the very beyond. First, the very beyond, the transcendental, needs a transformation in you. Otherwise, you will not be able to understand it. It needs a clarity of perception in you. It is not a question of intellect alone. Even a genius may not be able to understand it. And sometimes even an ordinary villager may be able to understand it. Sometimes even an Einstein may miss it. Because it is not a question of cleverness, intelligence, It is a question of clarity, not cleverness. Clarity is different. Cleverness is a way of being cunning with reality. It is cunningness. Clarity is completely different. It is not cunningness. It is innocence, childlike. You don't have a mind. The window is completely open. You don't have any ideas, because eyes, when filled with ideas, lose their clarity. It is just the sky filled with clouds. Mind filled with thoughts is not transparent. It is a junkyard. And through it, that junkyard, you cannot come to realize what reality is. One has to clean oneself. A deep cleansing is needed. One has to pass through many meditations, so that by and by your mind becomes clear, like a clear sky with no clouds. Only then. So it is not a question of intellectual understanding, it is a question of a different type of being. A being who is clear, like a clear sky. Second thing to remember is, a religious mind, never goes beyond the moment. Because the moment you go beyond the moment, you have started working through the mind. If you think of the future, future is not here. So how can you look at the future? You can only think. You can only think about the future. You cannot see it. Only the present moment can be seen. It is already here. So the religious mind lives in the moment. You cannot force the religious mind to go beyond the moment. Because the moment the religious mind thinks about the future, it is no more religious. Immediately the quality of the mind has changed. Religious mind exists here and now. And that is the only way to exist. If you think about the future, the moment that is not here, you are already in the trap of the mind and you have allowed thoughts to form. In the present there is no thought. Have you ever observed this? That right now, how can thought exist? No, thought never exists in the present. It always exists for the future or for the past. Either you think of the past, then there is imagination. Or you think of the future, then there is logic. How can you think of the present? You can only be. And the moment is so subtle and so small, so atomic, that there is no space for any thought to exist in it. Thought needs space, needs room. There is no room for thought. Only being can be there. So whenever you are in the present, thinking stops. Or, if you stop thinking, you will be in the present. A religious mind is not concerned about future. is not concerned about what happened in the past. It lives in the moment, and it moves from moment to moment. When this moment disappears, another moment comes, the religious man has moved into it. He is river-like. One very, very deep thing to be remembered, that a religious mind, a religious man, religious being is always a process. It is always moving. Of course, the movement is unmotivated. It is moving not for any goal. It simply moves because movement is the nature of reality. Movement is the nature of reality. It moves with reality. Just as somebody floats with the river, he moves with the river of time. Each moment he lives and moves. He is not doing anything. He simply lives the moment. When the moment is gone, another has come. He lives that moment. A religious man has a beginning but no end. Awakening has a beginning but no end. It goes on and on and on. And just the opposite is the case with ignorance. Ignorance has no beginning but an end. Can you say when your ignorance is started? It has no beginning. When Buddha's ignorance is started, it has no beginning. But it has an end. It ended on a certain full moon night, 25 centuries before. Ignorance has an end, no beginning. Enlightenment has a beginning, no end. And that's how the circle becomes complete. When an ignorant man becomes enlightened, the circle is complete. Ignorance has no beginning but the end. Enlightenment has the beginning and no end. Now the circle is complete. Now, here is the perfect being whose circle is complete. But this perfection doesn't mean any staticness, because enlightenment has no end. It goes on and on and on for eternities, forever. Now, try to understand this beautiful seed-like story. An ex-emperor asked the master Gudo, "What happens to a man of enlightenment after death?" If he had asked philosophers, they would have supplied many answers. Scriptures are full with answers. What happens to an enlightened man after death? Buddha was asked again and again the same question. And he will simply laugh sometimes. Once it happened, it was evening, and a small argan lamp was burning near Buddha, and somebody asked the question. that what happens to a man of enlightenment after death. Buddha put the light off and asked, what happens now to the flame which is no more? Where it has gone? Where it is now? Just a moment before it was here. Now where it has gone? The same happens to the man of enlightenment. This is not an answer. The man must have gone unsatisfied. Buddha is avoiding. Those who have known have always avoided. But those who don't know, they have many answers. Scholars, pundits, you ask them and they will supply many answers. You can choose any of your liking. Guru replied, how should I know? You are asking something of the future and I am here and now. And for me there is no future. Only this moment exists. There is no other moment. That's why Guru says, how should I know? You are talking about death, death of an enlightened person. Somewhere in the future. Or somewhere in the past. What happened to Buddha? Guru says, I'm here and now. No past is meaningful for me, no future. He's saying, look at me right now. The enlightened being is before you, Guru is saying, look at me. Why you are concerned? It happened once that a man came to meet Guru. He was a very famous master. And the man was very old, near about 90. And he belonged to a particular Buddhist sect. And he said, I have come from very far and my life is almost coming to an end. And I was always waiting a chance to meet you, because Guru was known all over the country as the master of the emperor. Before I die, I have come to you. I have to ask you one question. For almost 50 years, I have been studying scriptures. And I have come to know everything. Only one thing disturbs me. In my scripture it is written that even trees and rocks will become enlightened. That I could never understand. Trees and rocks. Guru said, tell me one thing. Have you ever thought about yourself? That can you become enlightened or not? The man said, it's strange, but I must confess, I never thought about it. Trees and rocks, how they can become enlightened? He has been thinking for 50 years. And he has come from far away to ask this question to Guru. And he has never thought about himself. People talk about death. Not knowing that right now you are alive, live it totally. Life is here, first know it. Why you talk about death? People talk about what will happen after death. It would be better to think what is happening to you right now after birth. And when death comes, we will meet it. First meet life that is here now. And if you can meet life, you will become capable of meeting death also. One who can live rightly will die rightly. One who has lived a total rich life of moment to moment moving, living, aware, conscious. Of course, when death comes, he will do the same with death. He will live it. Because he knows the quality how to live in the present. When death becomes the present, he will live it. But people are more concerned about death, less concerned about life. And if you cannot know life, how do you suppose that you will be able to know death? And death is not separate from life. It is the very culmination of it. If you miss life, you will not be able to see death. Death will come, but you will be unconscious. That's what is happening. People die in deep unconsciousness, coma. They lived their whole life in unconsciousness. When you treated life with unconsciousness, how do you suppose you will be able to be conscious before death? And life is 70, 80 years process. And you could not become aware even in 80 years. And death will happen in a single moment. Years were not enough for you to become conscious. 1 second, how you will be able? Only a person who has lived moment to moment will be able to see death. Because he has lived even life moment to moment. Even death cannot escape him. He has the clarity. Such intense clarity that even in a single moment death comes and moves. He will be able to see it. One who has been able to see life will automatically will be able to see death. And then one knows one is neither life nor death. One is just the witness. And when a person asks what happens to a man of enlightenment after death, he himself is not enlightened. From his deep ignorance he is asking. It is difficult to say. It is just a blind man asks. What happens when sun rises in the morning? How to explain to him? How to make the communication? It is impossible. It once happened. A man was blind. And not only blind, he was a great philosopher. The whole village was disturbed by him because he proved logically that there is no light. Because he said, "I have hands, show me where light is, I can touch and feel. If something exists, it can be touched. If something exists, it can be tasted. If something exists," he said, "you hit something against it, I can hear the sound." And the villagers were very much disturbed because they couldn't gather any proof. He had four senses, and he said, I have four senses. You bring light before me, and I will see through my four senses whether it is there or not. And they said that because you are blind, you cannot see. And he laughed, and he said, it seems that you are dreaming. What are eyes? And how can you prove that you have eyes and I don't have? And you tell me about your light, what it is. Explain it to me. They couldn't do that. It was impossible. But they felt very much depressed because this man is blind and they have eyes and they know the light is, but how to explain to a blind man? Then Buddha came to the town and they all took this mad philosopher, the mad blind man, to Buddha, and they asked Buddha that you try to explain to him, we have failed. And this man is something. He has proved that light is not there because it cannot be touched, cannot be smelled, cannot be tasted, cannot be heard. So how it can exist? Now you have come and you can explain to him. Buddha said, you are fools, because light cannot be explained to a blind man. The very effort is absurd. But I know one man who is a great physician. You take this man to him and he will treat his eyes. The man was taken to the physician, the eyes were treated. He was not really blind. Within 6 months, he started seeing. Then he came running to Buddha. Now he was in another town. He fell on his feet and he said, yes, now I know light is. And now I also know why those poor villagers could not prove it. And now I also know that you did well to send me to a physician. I needed treatment, not philosophy, not theories about light. When an ignorant person asks, what happens to an enlightened person after death? Leave death apart. What happens to an enlightened man while he is alive? Even that cannot be explained. That cannot be explained. What has happened to me? How I can explain it? No possibility. It is impossible. Unless you start seeing. Unless your eyes open. Unless you are changed. Nothing can be explained. The communication is not possible because enlightenment is totally a different quality of being. And you are completely blind to it. You can believe that I am enlightened, but you cannot see it. That belief will help. Because that belief will allow you to remain open. That trust will help. But you can deny. You can say no. I cannot believe. How I can believe? How can I trust when I don't know? That will close you. Then there is no possibility. That's why religion insists on trust, Shraddha. The blind man can only believe on trust. That people say light exists. And if he trusts, then the possibility is there. If he does not trust, then he will not allow even the treatment. He will say, what you are doing? There is no light and there is no possibility of eyes and I don't believe. So please, don't waste your time and don't waste my time. It is impossible to communicate from one plane to another plane. It doesn't function at all. You have to rise up to another plane of being. Only then suddenly you can see. And when you see an experience, then the trust is fulfilled. But before you see, one has to be in faith, to be in trust, just to allow the transformation. Guru replied, how should I know? Death has not come yet. When it comes, then I will know. And I will inform you. But right now I don't know. An enlightened person will not give you theories. He would like to give you insight, not theories. Insight is a deep phenomena within you. Theory is just borrowed. He could have replied, because there are theories what happens to the enlightenment. Some said he reaches to a plane called moksha, where he lives forever and ever. Some are more colorful. They say he reaches to the kingdom of God and lives with God forever and ever, just like Jesus sitting by the throne of God on the right hand and angels dancing and singing and celebration goes on and on. And there are millions of theories, but they are all created by theologians just to console people. You ask, somebody has to give you the answer. But not by enlightened persons. They have remained silent about it. They are not concerned at all. Jesus says, consider the lilies of the field. They exist only here and now. They don't bother about the tomorrow. The tomorrow will take care of itself. Somebody brought the New Testament to a Zen master and he read few sentences from it. Particularly this sentence, when he read, consider the lilies in the field. They toil not. They don't think of the morrow. And they are so beautiful in the here and now that even Solomon, the great emperor, in his peak glory, was not arrayed in such beauty. The Zen master said, stop, whosoever said this is a Buddha. He didn't know about Jesus. He didn't know about Christianity. Christianity has reached Japan just a few days before. The master said, stop, no more to say anything. Whosoever said this is a Buddha. All enlightened persons have insisted to remain with the moment. That's why, says Gudo, how should I know? The ex-emperor said, why? Because you are a master. From a master, we expect answers. And in fact, a master never gives you an answer, he simply destroys your questions. Vast difference is there between these two things. From a master we expect answers of our questions. Questions are foolish, answers cannot be better. How can you answer a foolish question in a wise way? The very question is foolish. Somebody comes and asks, what is the taste of green color? It is absurd. Because there is no relationship. But the question looks perfect. Linguistically, it is perfect. You can ask, what is the taste of green color? There is no error in the language, in the formulation. The same is the case when somebody asks, what happens to an enlightened person when he is dead? For many reasons. First, he is never dead. An enlightened person is one who has come to know the eternal life. He is never dead. Second, an enlightened person is no more a person. His ego is dissolved. That's why he is enlightened. So, in the first place, he is never dead. In the second place, he is already dead. Because he is no more. Buddha moves for 40 years after his enlightenment. And it is said that in those 40 years, while he was wandering from village to village, talking to people continuously for 40 years, giving them whatsoever he has attained, it is said he never uttered a single word and he never took a single step. What do you mean? And it is rightly said that he never uttered a single word because he is no more. How can you utter a word when you are not? As if existence himself, not Buddha, uttered those words. Because Buddha is no more a person now. Just the name has remained utilitarian. Otherwise there is no need, functional. He has never taken a single step and he was wandering and wandering. The whole province of Bihar is called Bihar because of his wanderings. Bihar means the wandering. Because he was wandering there, the whole province is known as Bihar. But it is said he never took a single step, and it is right, absolutely right, he never took a single step. I tell you, I continuously talk to you and I have not uttered a single word. When the ego is not there, who can utter? then what is happening when I am talking to you? It is just like breeze passing through the trees. It is just like a spring moving towards the river. It is just like a flower opening, but I am not there. So the flower cannot claim that I opened myself. The breeze cannot say, because the breeze has no ego in it to say, that I passed through these trees. The river cannot say that I am moving towards the ocean. The river moves, but there is nobody who is moving. I talk to you, but I have not uttered a single word. But how to communicate these things? An enlightened person is already dead. The past has disappeared. The center is no more there. Now he is nowhere. He exists everywhere. Now he is one with the whole. The wave has lost itself into the ocean. So when you see Buddha standing, that is just a contact point, that's all, that body. Nothing else. Just like a plug of the electric energy. Just you plug there and the energy moves, otherwise the energy is everywhere. So when Buddha is standing, he is just a contact point for the cosmos. He is no more there. Just a passage. Just the anchor into this world. And when the anchor is lost, that is what, when Buddha's body will drop, you ask what happens? When a wave is no more, what happens? It becomes the ocean. When a Buddha is no more, the body is disappears. The wave has disappeared. Buddha is already dead. That's why he is a Buddha. And secondly, he cannot never die. Because once the ego is lost, the eternal life is attained. Now Buddha is not anywhere, he will be everywhere. When you don't have a center, the whole existence becomes your center. The question is foolish. Looks logical, meaningful, but is foolish. That's why Guru replied, how should I know? Many things are implied. Guru is saying, I am not. Who should know? When the wave disappears in the ocean, how should I know? The ex-emperor said, why? Because you are a master. We expect answers from a master. Answers are given by teachers, not by masters. Masters simply destroy your mind. Even if it appears that they are answering you, they never answer. They are elusive. You ask something, they talk something else. You ask about A, they talk about B. But they are very persuasive, seductive. They talk about B and they convince you that yes, your question is answered. But your questions are foolish, they cannot be answered. They are irrelevant. So a master never answers the questions. He gives you the feeling that he is answering you, but he is simply trying you to pull the earth beneath your feet. The whole effort is that your mind falls, collapses. If you can be near a master for a little while, you will collapse. He is a chaos. You will be pulled down completely. Neither questions will be there nor answers. Only then, when silence exists in you, a master has succeeded with you. Answers will fill your mind again. So how a master can give you answers? There will be theories. They won't allow you to enter in reality. A master really cuts your questions. And by, you stop asking. And a moment comes of no asking. Only then the answer is given. But that answer is not verbal. That answer is from his very being. Then the master pours himself into you. He is a vehicle. Then the whole pours through him unto you. Why? Because you are a master. We think that a master must be very knowledgeable. He must know everything. In fact, a master knows nothing. He has attained to perfect ignorance. Because only ignorance can be innocent, knowledge never. Knowledge is always cunning. It can never be innocent. Perfect ignorance. He does not know anything. Knowledge has dropped. He is, but he is not a knower. And whatsoever he says is out of his innocence, not out of his knowledge. He can say millions of things because innocence is so potent. He can go on and on for years. 40 years Buddha talked. And now scholars say that it seems impossible how one man can talk for 40 years. And so many things. It seems difficult for them because they don't know that innocence is inexhaustible. Knowledge will exhaust. If I know something, it is limited. Then I cannot go on and on and on. And I tell you, if you are ready, I can go on and on for eternity. Because it is not out of knowing, but out of perfect ignorance. Perfect ignorance is not your ignorance. Your ignorance is not perfect. You know. In fact, you know too much. You cannot find an ignorant person who doesn't know. He may know less, more, but he knows. He may know wrongly or rightly, but he knows. Even an idiot knows and insists that he knows rightly. Only an enlightened man denies that he knows. Said Socrates that when I was young, I knew many things. In fact, I knew all. Then I became a little more mature and I started feeling that I don't know much, very little. And when I became very, very old, then I understood the whole thing. Now I know only one thing that I don't know. And while he was young, he knew many things. Youth is arrogant. Only immature persons are knowledgeable. Maturity is like ignorance. It doesn't know. Or it knows only this much. Says Gudo, how should I know? Why? Because you are a master. Answers are expected. You must know. If you don't know, then who else will know? Beautiful is Gudo. Said he, yes sir, but not a dead one. I am a master, but not a dead one. Wait. When I am dead, then I will answer that what happens when an enlightened person dies. I am yet alive, and you ask me about death. It has not happened. So how I should know? When it happens, I will report to you. It never happens to an enlightened man. Gudo is really clever. It never happens to an enlightened man. Only ignorant people die. Only the egos die. When there is no center inside you, who can die? How death is possible? Death is possible to the ego, to the self. How death can happen to the no self? All the enlightened people through the ages have been saying only one thing. Die to the ego, so that you can attain to the eternal. Let the ego die, then there will be no death for you. You become deathless. Enough for today.